Our topic this morning is Unique by God's Design, and I originally came up with this topic after I was given a different topic. I was asked to speak on, let's see if I can remember, Unique in God's Sight, I think, was the topic I was asked to speak on. And as I began to study it, I decided that that wasn't really quite scriptural from the studying I was doing. Because the feeling I got from that was that God looked at us and thought, you know, aren't you cute, aren't you special? And as I began to study it, especially in Jeremiah, which we'll talk about, I began to see that God made us unique. We weren't just born unique, but we were made unique. And so that's what I'd like for us to talk about this morning. I wonder if you are content with yourself. If you're content with your personality, with your looks, with your gifts and abilities, with your station in life, I'm sure every single one of us here in this room have contemplated at one time or another what our life would be like if only I was gifted in this area, if only I had married somebody else, if only my children were different. I doubt if there's anyone in this room who would, if she could, would not make some major changes in her life and in herself. Before we get into this, I'd like for you to consider question number one. And just, I'm not going to collect them and we're not going to discuss them as a group. So try to be real honest with yourself. This will help you to get more into what we're going to talk about. And just spend some time reflecting. For years, I struggled with who I was, and when I married Rod, my struggles increased and intensified, because when I married him, he was the vice president of the Navigators. So far, so good. But Rod was somewhat older than I was, and so, of course, the wives of his friends were also older than I was. They were more mature, more gifted in Christian ministry. And they were wise and godly women. And some of them were especially gifted in leadership. So soon I began to struggle with the Lord over the fact that I felt like he'd given me the right husband, but he had not given me the right gifts and abilities according to me to fit the role. I wanted to move into this charmed circle and be just as gifted in the ministry and wise and mature as these other ladies were. My pride was having a horrible time. The fairy tale started out so right, Prince Charming and all, but alas, I didn't feel like the princess quite measured up. God had put me in a noble position, but he gave me what I felt were common gifts and abilities. After a while, I didn't let anyone get too close to me because I didn't want them to know how ordinary I was. I was sure they thought because this wonderful man had married me that I must be wonderful too, and I didn't want them to find out how ordinary I was. And in the perverseness of the human mind, it really bothered me when gradually I found out they didn't expect me to be anyone special. They were quite ready to like and accept me because Rod did. I think they would have loved me if I'd had green hair and two heads. But they loved Rod, and so they loved me. But why did I want to be different? Why was I not happy with who I was? Because I thought I knew what was best for me. I thought I knew what would make me happy. And most of all, what would make me significant in the eyes of other people. Wouldn't I be the best one to know this? Who's closer to me and knows me better, me or God? Okay, let's spend about 5 minutes on question two. Are you unique? And what about you is unique? Do you need a pencil, would you like?
I like to think about it.
Okay, fine, that's fine. okay, we're going to consider for a few minutes. We're unique because God created us. We didn't just happen. And if you have your Bible, let's turn to Psalm 139. I have this new Bible, and it is so hard to... Okay. Psalm 139, 1 through 16. David tells us that God knows us better than we know ourselves. He created us. Verse 1 says, O Lord, you have searched me and you know me. You know when I sit and when I arise. You perceive my thoughts from afar. And then he just goes on. Verse 5, you hem me in behind and before. Where can I go from your spirit? If I rise on the wings of the dawn, if I settle on the far side of the sea, even there your hand will guide me. Verse 13, for you created my inmost being. You knit me together in my mother's womb. I praise you because I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Your works are wonderful, and I know that full well. How many of us would say, I am fearfully and wonderfully made? David's praising the works of God. That has nothing to do with self-pride. He's saying, look at what you did, Lord. This is magnificent. God knows us better than we know ourselves because he created us and he formed us from the very beginning in our mother's womb. But he's not just an observer either. He didn't just make us and then let the growth process go on. He didn't create us and then become a spectator in our lives. He didn't create a plan for us and then sort of take his hands off and stand back and watch to see what happened. He says, all the days ordained for me are written in your book before one of them came to be. You planned them all. But then, as we look over in Jeremiah 18:4, God likens himself to a potter in the clay. And this is where we see his daily working in our lives. He created us, but then he gets right in there and begins to form us. Begins to work and shape us. In Jeremiah 18:4, it says, but the pot he was shaping from the clay was marred in his hands, so the potter formed it into another pot, shaping it as it seemed best to him. And in Isaiah 64:8, Isaiah says, yet, O Lord, you are our Father. We are the clay, you are the potter, we are all the work of your hand. God is telling us here that he has a sovereign right over who we are and who we become. We're all the work of his hands. All of us know that God brought us into being because he wanted us to exist. He didn't have to create us. He wanted to. We didn't just happen. Just because our parents loved each other and a child came from their love. God made me unique to fulfill his purposes for me. He didn't make me unique to make me prestigious or important in my own eyes or in the eyes of other people. We've heard it stated that God has a plan for our lives, but are you aware that he created you and is forming you to fulfill the plan every day? And it's not some far-off, lofty plan 20 years from now. He has a plan for you today. And we are unique because we and we alone can fulfill the plan that God has for us. Nobody else can. Nobody else lives where you live. No one else is the sister to the brothers and the sisters in your family. No one else is the daughter to your parents. No one else is the mother to your children. Somebody else may be able to fulfill that function, But nobody else is you. Nobody else has your personality. Nobody else has the same relationships. Nobody else can be who you are. Do you think of yourself as unique when you sat there a few minutes ago? Did you have a little trouble with that? Usually not, because most of us see ourselves as ordinary, sort of run-of-the-mill, not having abilities or accomplishments that are unusual or extraordinary. And even if we do happen to have one or two, we feel so ordinary in the other areas that we discount it, because we base our worth on what we do. David saw his uniqueness as based on what God had done, not on what he did or could do. He based his uniqueness on how the potter made him, formed him, and planned his life. God's deep caring and involvement into all aspects of David's life left David totally in awe of himself because of what God had done. I am fearfully and wonderfully made. And the fantastic thing was, he wasn't saying, I'm better than anybody else, or I'm more unique than anyone else. Everyone on this earth is fearfully and wonderfully made. Our ego and our pride want us to be better than other people and to have the gifts and abilities that everyone else has. And this was, God didn't create us to compete. This was the basic attitude brought upon by Satan when he said, I will be better than the Most High. I wanted to fit in with Rod's peers by having gifts and abilities that they had, or even better gifts and abilities than they had. I wanted to stand out, but God didn't create me to fit in that way. He didn't put me in Rod's life to be like his peers, but to be what he planned and equipped me to be. And it's not necessary that I even figure out what that is sometimes. A few years ago, Dr. John Houston, the Chancellor of Regency College in British Columbia, was here speaking to our staff, and he made this comment about uniqueness. We do not know how to cope with our own uniqueness. We feel we need to be like others. We base our self-worth on how we measure up to other people. We're constantly evaluating our performance, our looks, our personality against somebody else. Okay, the second point I'd like us to consider for a minute is that we're unique because God is forming us that way. First of all, he created us that way, and then he's forming us that way. It is our relationship to the Lord that makes us unique. It's our relationship to the Lord that causes us to be and to do those things that have value and worth. But in our relationship to the Lord, we run into problems in the Christian family. We become a Christian, and suddenly it seems like we're to fit into a mold. We begin to hear, a Christian does this, and a Christian does that, and a Christian is this, and a Christian is that, and a Christian doesn't do this, and a Christian doesn't do that. And some of us try very hard to become what we think a Christian is and isn't. And some of us try hard to make other people be what we think a Christian should be and shouldn't be. And a critical attitude on our part quite often is indicative of whether we're doing this to other people or not. Why do you suppose this is? Well, because as Dr. Houston said, we're not comfortable with our own uniqueness. We're afraid of being different. It's too threatening. It would be so much easier if everyone were just alike. Then there wouldn't be any competition. Until we base our self-worth on God and instead of ourselves, we'll always be threatened by differences. Okay, would you like to spend just a few minutes on question three? How do you feel you fit into the Christian community? Okay, in Romans 14:4, Paul is talking to the Romans about different religious practices. And he says, "Who are you to judge someone else's servant? To his own master he stands or he falls, and he will stand because the Lord is able to make him stand." That's an admonition for us not to judge someone else. And then in Romans 9:20 it says, "Who are you, O man, to talk back to God? Shall what is formed say to him who formed it, 'Why did you make me like this?'" That's what I've been doing. God, why did you make me like this and then put me in this situation where I don't feel like I fit? Or I don't feel like I fit the way I want to fit. I don't feel like I fit the way I want to shine. It says, doesn't the potter have the right to make out of the same lump of clay some pottery for noble purposes and some for common? That's Romans 9:20. Visualize with me for a moment a potter sitting at his wheel working with a lump of clay. He needs a big round basin to hold water. So he begins to form it. If any of you have taken pottery classes, you know how they go about that. But as he begins to work it, all of a sudden, the lump starts talking to him and says, "Just a minute. I would like a long, graceful spout on the side like that teapot over there on the counter. I think that's gorgeous, and I'd like that." Now, this is a basin. This is what the potter needs, and that's why he's making something, because he needs a basin. And he needs a basin for holding water. So what would happen if he took this basin and added a spout to the side of it? Certainly what, it would ruin its use. It would leak. It would look ridiculous. And it would serve no useful purpose, this spout. Because the potter knows what the basin needs to be used for. As he's forming it, the basin doesn't know what it's going to be used for. So he has all these bright ideas of what he would like. And that's what I wanted. I wanted that useless spout. Or a pretty handle. Things that God didn't intend for me to have because they wouldn't have served his purposes in my life. But the basin doesn't have the wisdom and foresight to know what it needs, and neither do we. What the basin becomes has to be left up to the potter. He's making it. He has the skills to do it, and most importantly, he has the reason for bringing it into existence. It wouldn't be in existence if he didn't have a purpose for it. Jeremiah told us that the potter formed the pot as seemed best to the potter. Since we're the pots, isn't it right that God the potter should form us as he seems fit? Should it, or should he at least consult us? Shouldn't we have some say in the outcome? What would guide our requests and thoughts as to who we should be? Do we know the end from the beginning? Do we know more about our innate gifts and abilities than the God who put them in us? Do we know what's best for us? And most of all, do we understand the inner workings of our minds and hearts enough to know what would really satisfy the deep longings of our hearts? We don't really. A few years ago, I read a book that some of you might have read called Lord, Change Me by Evelyn Christensen. And her main premise is that most of the time, our prayers are for the Lord to change people, problems, and circumstances, instead of to change us, when what we really need is for God to change us, regardless of the circumstances, the people, and the problems. Most of my prayers have been, oh, Lord, change my circumstances. I don't like them. Or, Lord, change my husband. I don't want him to be that way. Or, change my children. They're driving me crazy. Or if I asked the Lord to change me, it was to change me to be a wonderful person. And, of course, the change was to be pleasant. Not a deep change of the heart, not a sacrificial cutting away of sin. Since God had given me Rod for a husband, Rodney and Lisa for children, and a life and relationships in Colorado Springs, doesn't it make more sense that I should ask him to change me to be the person I needed to be as a wife to Rod, as a mother to Rodney and Lisa, and as a woman in all the situations that he took me into? Change me to be the person he planned for me to be. Do with me whatever he needed in order to make me useful to him. I had been fighting him for so long, wanting to be what I wanted to be. I wanted that useless spout. I wanted a decorative handle that would have been in the way. I thought I knew what was best for me. And it wasn't until I surrendered my desires and plans for me and plans for my family, especially plans for my children, that God really began to change me. Well, how does God change us? When a potter is getting the clay ready to form on the wheel, he takes the lump, and he kneads it, and he presses it, and he squeezes it before he ever begins twirling the wheel. He kneads it. What is he doing? He's getting the air out. And he's getting the lumps out. He's getting the air out, because if he doesn't get the air out, when the pot is formed and fired, the air will expand and it will crack. He's getting the lumps out so that it will be smooth and free of distortions when it's formed. Do you ever feel God pushing, pressing, and squeezing? I do. Is there sin in your life that makes you lumpy? Sin that distorts the person God planned for you to be today? Is there lack of faith that's going to make you crack when times get hard? Are you still asking God why, or saying, I don't deserve this, I've been such a good Christian? God has to eliminate the sin in our lives, the impurities that would cause us to crack. The more we're tried, the purer we can become. The less doubts, the less prone we are to rely on ourselves, the quicker we are to trust God, and the more he can do in our lives. Some of the impurities that are brought to the surface by hard times are doubt, fear, and self-reliance. And these don't seem like such bad things. You'd think I would be talking about immorality and real biggies. But listen to what Hosea says about them in Hosea 10:13. But you have planted wickedness, you have reaped evil, you have eaten the fruit of deception. Wickedness, evil, deception. Why? Because you have depended on your own strength and on your many warriors. It's a turning from God. It's a self-reliance. Other gods come in many forms, and one of the most deceptive is ourselves. Self-reliance, self-pride, self-accomplishment. I remember, maybe 10 years ago, maybe longer now, walking into the grocery store and seeing the magazine Self on the rack. I was aghast. I mean, now it doesn't seem like anything. But I came home and I said, Rod, you'll never believe the magazine. I mean, the title is Self. That was so incredible to me that we would actually name a magazine in such a selfish way. And I was speaking the other day, and somebody said they had just heard a comedian say, indicative of the world today is the name of magazines. As you look back, the name used to be World, Life, then it became People, Us, and now Self. It's quite a commentary on our generation. In this world, we're taught that those are good things, self-reliance, self-pride, self-accomplishment. But in reality, in the Christian realm, these are bad. Those are traits of Satan. He wanted to be higher than God. Self got in the way. He was the angel of light. Instead of being what God intended for him to be, he tried to be something else. And in so doing, was cast forever from the relationship with the Lord that he was intended to have. On Christmas Eve of 85, when Rod was put in the hospital with a blood clot in his left leg, the doctor had him there. He decided to do some other tests because Rod was also experiencing some abdominal pain. And so the test revealed what appeared to be an ulcer in his stomach. But because of his past cancer history, they decided to go ahead and do a biopsy anyway. And that evening, before we knew the results of the biopsy, we were just sitting in his room talking over the last 6 years since his last bout with cancer. And we both decided that those had been the best 6 years of our lives. The best 6 years because of what God had done in our lives and what he'd done in the lives of our children. God had radically changed our relationship to him because of being faced with, as I said last night, the future, the immediate future, eternity. Well, the next day, as I went back to visit Rod, I was thinking over what we had talked about the night before, and I decided we had to be masochistic. What had the last 6 years held for us? Well, Rod had been in the hospital 6 times. He'd had 2 cancer surgeries and 1 other. He'd spent a year on chemotherapy. Both of our children had gone through junior high with deep struggles. How could we say that these had been the best 6 years of our lives? Well, as I'm sure a lot of you know, because God had done what he promised in Romans 8:28, he had made all things work together for good. He'd used these things to change us, not to defeat us. And a lot of times we quote Romans 8:28 without Romans 8:29. Romans 8:28, of course, is, and we know all things work together for the good of those who love him, who've been called according to his purpose. Verse 29 says, for those God foreknew, he also predestined to be conformed to the likeness of his Son. So often we do quote Romans 8:28 by itself, that God will make all things work together for good. But too often we expect that to mean we'll work together for happiness, earthly happiness. But what Paul is saying in verse 29 is that the good is confirmation to Christ. It's not just momentary happiness. And is forming and conforming pleasant? In my experience, rarely. We just talked about the potter. After he's pushed, pressed, squeezed, then he starts forming the clay. Now visualize for yourself that you're this piece of clay. You've been pressed, pushed, squeezed. You're lump-free. All the air is out. But now the potter begins to form. And if you've watched, potter usually has a hand on the outside, begins to put his fingers in the middle, and as the pot begins to take shape, one hand goes on the inside and one hand goes on the outside. So this dear pot is being pushed from the inside and from the outside. And isn't that the way life seems to us a lot of times? I'll never forget, after we had our second child, I felt I lost control of life. You know, a one-on-one situation is hard enough for a new mother. But then when your focus is on one child and the other child can go in the other direction, I felt like somehow things had reached an impasse. I had lost control. Everything is coming unglued at one time. But these are the kinds of times that shape us and mold us more than the one problem times. The one problem times where we can sort of, you know, be in control and hang on to it all. It's when things are coming at us from outside, things are coming at us from inside. There are family problems, there are relationship problems, perhaps there are physical problems. And these are the times when we can really turn to the Lord and trust Him, because we can't handle it on our own. Don't be afraid to let God make of you what you're not for His purposes. Let Him do more forming. Don't stay locked behind your fears and insecurities. Don't say, I can't. Not because you can, but because you can trust God to enable you in the little and the big things. In 2 Corinthians 1:9, Paul tells us of all his trials. These things happened so that we might not rely on ourselves, but on God. Do we crack and break during the forming process? I do a lot. We don't need to if our strength is in the Lord. We don't need to if we're not trusting in ourselves. And we don't need to if we're trusting God to use it for good, eternal good, not momentary happiness. After Rod's first cancer surgery, I decided I wanted to know more about suffering, as I said last night. So I started studying about it. And after a year or so, I really was excited about what God does with suffering in our lives, how He uses it, how we grow. I began to see it as a positive thing and a necessary thing in our Christian walk. Our prayers in difficulty are usually, oh, God, get me out of here. Or don't let that happen to me. Or don't let it last too long. Think about what you pray for someone who's going through a hard time. James tells us, count it pure joy whenever you face trials. Whenever you face trials. That means when you see them coming. Count it pure joy. Look upon it as a good thing. Boy, that takes a discipline of the mind and the heart. It is not natural. Why joy? Why not fear and resignation? Because then we're entering it expecting God to use it and cooperating with Him to use it. We're participating with God in allowing Him to use it for good instead of the evil that it can produce. It can produce bitterness, frustration, doubt, fear. James also says trials produce a faith that perseveres and lasts through anything. And the result is a life that is mature and complete. Complete in ourselves? No. A life that's complete is one that depends upon the Lord. And how is that? Because in the Lord is everything we need. So if we're trusting Him, we are totally complete. We have everything we need. Not everything we want, or even everything we think we need, but everything we need. Okay, how can we allow God to form us? How can we help Him? How can we cooperate? John 12:24, Jesus says, unless a kernel of wheat falls to the ground and dies, it remains a single seed. We all of us start out a seed. That's what we are right here, a seed. The unique new person that God planned for us to be, we don't even have a clue who that is. Just as a seed doesn't have a clue what kind of a plant it would be. Do you think any seed, if it knew the plant it would become, would stay a seed? If it had a mind, if it thought through the whole process. But as long as the seed remains a seed, it cannot become a plant. It has to totally lose the identity of a seed. It has to fall on the ground and die in order to become the plant. So also Christ tells us, in order to find our life, we have to lose it.
I heard a good analogy to the seed, and that is that you can count the seeds in an apple, but you can't count the apples in a seed. I don't know
that one. Yeah, that's terrific.
Yeah.
How many apples come from one small seed? We have to die to ourselves. There's no way we can be two people at once. There's no way we can be the person we are now and the person God intends for us to be tomorrow if we're not willing to trust Him and step out in faith. And I don't mean for this to be a nebulous thing. The person we are to be tomorrow is still going to be Diane Kindall, is still going to be you're still going to live where you live. You're still going to be in the family where you belong. But God has things in you to bless and to minister to other people that we're very fearful about. We're very fearful about opening ourselves up and reaching out to other people, even our families. We're afraid to trust ourselves to other people. The biggest single factor in God beginning to change me has been in my spending more time with Him, getting to know Him better. Because then, as I trust Him, I can give myself away. I'm not so worried about myself. The potter has different types of clay to work with. Some clays make heavy, serviceable stoneware articles. Some make fragile, translucent, lovely, decorative pieces. But the potter knows, has the wisdom to know which clay to use for which articles. Even more so, our potter knows what he has planned for us to be. He knows what he has put in us, personality traits, gifts, abilities, physical and mental makeup, in this body of ours to accomplish His purposes. We need to die to ourselves and become alive to others. And as we do, God will use and develop those traits of ours, those unique characteristics, to minister to those people around us in the way that He needs for us to. Every person brings into a group his own special dynamics. When we had our son, we thought the sun rose and fell on him. We just thought he was wonderful, cute, friendly, warm. And then we had our daughter. Well, she was so different. Lively, vibrant. I mean, she brought so much life into our family. We didn't even know we were missing it, though, until she came along. We didn't even know we needed it. The rest of us were pretty serious. We didn't realize that until this crazy kid arrived. So each of us brings into a group his own special dynamics. And you cannot say that you're not necessary, that you're not needed, and that you don't have anything to contribute. Because every single one of us does. You don't contribute what someone else contributes, thank goodness. Because then there wouldn't be any use for you. We are habitually involved in nurturing and nourishing ourselves. So it's not difficult to figure out, what can I do for someone else? What do you do for yourself? It's not a mystery. If someone needs something, do it for, you know, if someone, say there's a death, well, what's necessary to life? Food, laundry, shopping, childcare. Don't make it complicated. I discovered when Rod was in the hospital that one of the most helpful things in the world was for someone to call and say, I am going to do this and so for you, when can I do it? Instead of saying, what can I do to help? That's really hard. I know their heart was right, but rarely if ever did I call someone who said that to me. It was the person who said, I'm going to bring a meal over, what would be a good day? Or, I would like to do your laundry, when can I do that? Those kind of definite offers are much more helpful and will probably be you'll be taken up on it. A few years after Rudd's first surgery, I was talking to my daughter, who was then 12, and I said to her, Lisa, what do you think you learned during that time when Daddy was so sick? She thought about it for a minute and she said, Mom, I never knew so many people cared about us. And I thought, what a beautiful thing for her to have come away from with. She saw the love of people expressed to us. In the fall of 1985, before Rod went back in the hospital, the wife of a couple of that was in a Bible study with us was diagnosed with cancer of the jaw. And we just heard about it, and we were going to go over and spend some time with him that evening. And Lisa, again, was with me, and we were driving somewhere in the car, and I asked her to pray about our time with Jane and Dave that evening. And she prayed, the dearest prayer. She asked the Lord to help us to say and do the things that would make them know that we were their true friends. That's what people need. And it takes time to be a friend. Nobody can be loved enough. And we're to be instruments of God's love. I've learned a lot about friendship the last few years. We all need to be loved, but most of us are waiting for somebody else to make the first move. We're afraid. We're afraid to reach out. We're afraid that they don't want to be our friend. And we're very afraid of rejection. And I made giant steps in trusting God when I decided that it would be all right if I was rejected. That He was big enough to handle that hurt for me. My responsibility was to reach out, and if someone needed the friendship, they would respond. My responsibility wasn't to sit around and try to figure out if they needed it before I offered. We're consumed with protecting ourselves, not losing ourselves with other people. Telling the Lord I wanted to give myself away, to stop caring so much about myself, has been a very freeing experience. It hurts to be rejected, but God is well able to carry us through it. We can therefore help God form us by dying to ourselves and becoming more and more alive to other people. We can help God form us by getting to know Him better so that we can trust Him more and allow Him to work in our lives more freely. God made us unique, but that uniqueness is not for our own selfish ends. Did Christ use his uniqueness to establish his kingdom here on earth? To wow the crowds with his miracles? To escape suffering and crucifixion? No, he constantly brought people back to the God who had sent him and to the Father's work through him to the redemption of the world. We're made as we are to benefit the body of Christ, and our gifts and abilities are to benefit the body of Christ, not to pleasure ourselves. And that's usually why we want to be different. Christ revealed God, and our uniqueness is to reveal the Father in the way that we live, the way that we treat people. We're unique because God made us that way, and our uniqueness is an evidence of the handiwork of God. God made each of us unique. He made each of us for a relationship with himself and for a purpose. And that purpose is right where you live, right now, today. Let's see, what time is it? If you want to, you can take a few minutes to work on the fourth question. Let's see, were we to be over at 12:30? 11? 11:15 to 12:30, I think so. Are there any questions about what I said or anything I could clarify?
Maybe the bottom part of your third question. What do you wish you could do as a Christian? That really stumped me. Maybe you could just elaborate on what you had in mind.
Well, I guess I was thinking of, you know, maybe you'd like to lead Bible studies or
Christian activities.
Or you know, just that kind of thing. Well, thank you, ladies.